We are holding on Samach Vav Omer Aleph at the top. So we've been learning about the kosher and non-kosher locusts. We brought two brises in that connection. And we have a pasuk that mentions the kosher locust. It's Eilam Ahem Techelu, Esa Arba Laminoi, Vesa Tholam Laminehu, Vesa Chagav Laminehu, Vesa Chagav Laminehu. Four types, where each one it says after it, Laminoi or Laminehu. So we have one brisa that said that we just learn from each Laminoi or Laminehu. We learn another related species, which is also mutter. So it comes out you have eight types. Then we had a second brisa from Tanit Ve'Rabbi Shmuel, which was much more elaborate, which said that what it is that we learn from each of the first three types. We said we learn from the Arba, from the Solom, and from the Chargol that you have different. There are different types of locusts that have different details in their bodies, whether they have hair-like things or whatever on the front of their head or they don't, whether they have a tail or whether they don't. And by putting that all together, we say that it doesn't matter, those details don't matter, as long as it has the four simonim of four legs, four wings, the wings cover the majority of the body and the two jumping legs, then it's okay. As long as, then we said, then it mentions Chogav to tell us that also it also has to be part of the family of Chogav. We discussed, does that mean across the board? Does it mean only if they have long heads? Anyway, those were the two brises. So the question is, what is the underlying argument between the two brises, where in the first brise that we had that each Laminehu just teaches us a related species. We're not specifically learning anything from Arbe or from Solom or from Chargol or from Chogav, other than just that's the name of it. And then there's some other type of locust which is related to it, which is also mutter. Whereas Tonet Ve'Rabbi Shmuel, we're saying that we're learning from Arbe that are locusts with certain physical characteristics that have hair on the front of their head as mutter, and then from Solom we're learning even if it doesn't, and so what's the machlokus over here? In particular, the fact that Tonet Ve'Rabbi Shmuel is saying that he takes the word Chogav and tells us that it means that crickets would be awesome. Whereas according to the first brisa, we didn't have any specific meat to say that. Well, we didn't need. According to the first brisa, we just had eight species listed, implying everything else is awesome. So what's the underlying machlokes? The answer is, b'maykom b'sugi tana dvei rav, tana dvei rav ishmol. The brisa of dvei rav and the brisa of dvei rav ishmol, what are they arguing? Now, the first brisa, Rashi explains, is called tana dvei rav. It's a brisa from Torah's Koyanim. The Torah's Koyanim is the Medrash Halacha on Vayikra, which goes through pasuk by pasuk and phrase by phrase and explains what we learn from the Psukim. It's called Tana Dvei Rav, or it's called Sifra Dvei Rav. Rashi says not that it was composed or learned specifically by Rav, but rather Dvei Rav means of the yeshiva, meaning something that was commonplace and well, not just of Rav. Dvei Rav generically means a yeshiva. In other words, these are brises that were known in all the yeshivas and learned in all the yeshivas. As opposed to Tanit Ve'Rabbi Shmuel was only learned by his Talmidim and their successors. That's according to Rashi. The Rambam actually holds that Tanit Ve'Rav was actually composed, that the Sifra was actually composed or at least put in its final form by Rav. Anyway, the point is, what's the argument between the Brises? So like this, Beroshe Oroch Kamitzvi. The bottom line argument between them is, what if you have a locust that has a long head? Now we said before that the first three that are mentioned in the pasuk, the Arba, the Solom, and the Chargol, none of them have a long head. And so we were saying in Tanit Ve'Rabbi Shmuel's Braisa, we were saying, so how do we know that you're allowed to eat locusts with long heads? We said because ultimately the pasuk is implying that that's not a criterion that matters. The criteria that matter are the four simonim plus that it has to be called Chargol. So therefore, like this. Tana Dvei Rav Sabar, so the Tana of Dvei Rav, the first Braisa that just mentioned the four types and the four subtypes without going into any details, he holds what you have is like this. Ashaloi Kra'ayim Klal, you have a Klal at the beginning of the Pasuk. You have a Klal at the beginning of the Pasuk that it's that any locust that has the jumping legs is Mutter. Then it mentions specific ones, Arba Solom Chargov, and Laminehu. All of that is prat. All of that, according to the first braisa, are all pratim. They're all mentioning specific species or subspecies of locusts. So therefore, we have a klal of prats. And the rule is ein b'chlal ela mashe b'prat. So what do you have when you have a klal of prat? Means the klal is only meant to include only what's listed as the prat. You can't include anything else, no matter even if it's similar. So therefore, demine in the lav demine loy. So therefore, only things that are mentioned over there, only things that are laminoi can be included, not anything else. So therefore, if you're going to include anything, it has to be including something that is similar in two ways. Meaning, number one, that it has the four simonim, and number two, that they have short heads. So the only ones you can include based on the laminehus are things that are actually laminehu, that are really a subspecies of the four that I mentioned in the pasuk. Arbas, Solom, Chargo, Chogov. So only those. Delav, Demine, Loi, something that's not Lamino, cannot be included because you don't have another klal to include. Right, because you don't have another klal to include them. Umarbi, the Dummy Lem, the Shnei Tzadin. So the only ones we can include on the basis of Lamino is Laminehus, is the ones that are similar in two ways to the ones that I mentioned. Namely, if we had a klal, a prat, a klal, that would be enough to say as long as they're similar in one way. But now that we don't have that, we only have a klal and a prat. So it means, so the prat mentions four species. The prat also includes four times the word laminehu or laminoi. So therefore it means they have to be really a subspecies of them. And how are they a subspecies? Only if number one, they have the four simonim, the legs, the wings, etc. And number two, that they have short heads, because all of these types that we mentioned thus far all have short heads. So according to Tana Dveirav, you have no ability to say that we should include locusts with long heads.
Shnei tzadin
means in two ways. It means number one as far as the simonim, and number two as far as having short heads. So fine, as far as the other things, hair on the front of the head or not, tail or not, those you have, the different kinds differ between them, because the Arba has the hair but no tail, and the Solom has no hair and no tail, So according to Tana Dveirav, you have no source to be able to say that long-headed locusts should be included because you only have a klal of prat. Whereas Tana Dveirav Ishmael Sover, the Tana Dveirav Ishmael, the second brisa, takes the view as follows. Yes, you start out with a klal and a prat. Asher lo yikra'ayim is a klal because you have a klal, anything that has the jumping legs. Arba Solom Chagor Chagor Prat. But then Tana Dveirav Ishmael says, no, not like you, Tana Dveirav, were saying that Laminehu is part of the Prat. Rather, Laminehu Chazav Akolo. The word Laminehu, he says, creates another klal.
So it's a klal
of Prat and klal. And, as the rule usually is, klal of Prat and klal, iat adon elakeina Prat. So it means now you can include anything that is similar to the Prat. So now you don't need it to be doubly similar, like Tanan Dreynav said. Umarbi called the Domile Bechadzan. So therefore, we can include anything that's similar in one way to the ones that we listed, namely that it has the four simonim, and also, since it mentioned Chogov at the end, then it means that it has to be in the family of Chogov. So the problem with that is, Beholoi Domi Klola Kamala Klola Basra. The problem with that is the initial klal and the final klal don't seem to be similar. Because what do you have? The first klal is saying just the jumping legs, the pasuk is saying. So it's only mentioning one simon. As long as it has the jumping legs, then you should be able to eat it. That's the klal. And if we only had that, I mean, any grasshopper that has jumping legs is mutter. So therefore, crickets would be mutter, and many other kinds would be mutter as well. Right. Then you have the prat. Fine. Klola Basra, and what do you have by the time you get to the last klal, by the time you get to the Minehu at the end? Ad the shovel ba ba simonim. You're saying that it means that it has to have all four simonim. So the first klal, usually when we talk about a klal of prat to klal, we're talking about the second klal has exactly the same scope as the first one. For example, a classic klal of prat
corresponds.
Right. In other words, a classic klal of prat to klal, for example, is the pasuk says that as far as Meiser Sheni, that you exchange Meiser Sheni food, produce for money. You take the money to your shalayim, and then it says you can spend the money b'chol asher ta'ava nafshecha, for anything that your heart desires, b'bakar, b'tzoyin, b'yayin, b'shecher, cattle, sheep, wine, or strong wine, or b'chol asher t'sho'ocha nafshecha, or whatever your heart asks you for. Whatever your nefesh, your desire asks you for. And there we have a classic klal, a prophet klal, that it means you don't have to spend ma'aseh sheni davka on those four things. It has to be something that directly or indirectly grows from the ground and produces offspring. So not water, not mushrooms, not non-food items or whatever, but
says it's the serif.
That's the point. No, because there you have the klal at the beginning, b'chol asher ta'ava nafshecha, and the end, b'chol asher t'sho'ocha nafshecha, have the same scope. But here they have different scope, because the first one is telling us only the one simon, jumping legs, and the last one is telling us the four simonim, because we derived it from the fact that we went through the three of them, and they all have this
right,
in common.
So
it's not a classic klal prophet, which in fact is why Tana Dvei Rav does not accept it as a klal prophet klal. That's exactly why they say that the Lamine who here is part of the prophet.
And that's the conversation.
The answer is Tana Dvei Rav Shmuel, but klaler prophet kihai gavna doyin. Yeah, as a matter of fact, Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel holds that is a valid way of making a klal a prophet klal. They don't care if the second klal has a different scope than the first one. As long as a klal a prophet klal can be made, they hold it's valid.
We never had in the shas before that there's a...
We have. Okay. As a matter of fact, yes. Uda amrina nami ba'alma. As a matter of fact, the Gemara continues, we say elsewhere in shas, one example we had of it, we had actually a couple of examples of it in Zvachim. We say in other places in Shas that the doyin Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel b'kol u'prasi k'hai gavna, that we said that Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel uses that type of klal u'prasi klal where the second klal does not have the same scope as the first one, and nevertheless they consider it valid and learn from that. We learned that in Zvachim. Mehocha, that comes from our Gemara over here that we just established that that is what Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is doing.
For 1 second over there, we never had the... Clearly, a machlokes in the klal of prophet klal.
We said over there that Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel does that. We mentioned that in that connection. We talked at the beginning of Zvachim. We were learning about the whole issue of how we know that the whole concept of shinui Hashem and shinui Bailim and shinui Kodesh when you bring a korban, you have to have in mind with the person that it's being brought for and the type of korban, and then and so on and so forth. And if any of those are changed, either the korban is possible or at least it's not oila for the owner, as the case may be. So we ended up saying that we have a klal of prophet klal from which that we have a klal of prophet klal that we can learn that it applies to the four avodas. And the question was, we said over there that the first klal is comes from the word yaseh, which implies only things that are part of the actual asiyah of the carbon, the shechting and the kabbalah and so forth. The last one we said we're learning from Lashem includes also that the shvichas shirayim and aktaras emurin, also the pouring of the remainder of the blood and burning the emurim. And we said, yes, Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, we said, we'll learn, according to Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel, that is a valid call of prophet
klal.
Okay, so we didn't mention so much about
machloket.
Okay.
Tana Dvei Rabbi and Tana Dvei...
Fine, but maybe we didn't talk about the machloket. But the point is, this that we say in other places in Shas, that Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel considers that an acceptable call of prophet klal, we get that from here.
It's
also on the side of here. It references in Baba Kama as well, in connection with Tashlom and Abba Chamisha. Tosfos points out. I mean, the Gemara could have also said that the Gemara could have also said the Nafkamina between Tana Dvei Rav and Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel is Pashat. Are there other locusts that you're allowed to eat? Or is it limited only to the eight that Tana Dvei Rav is mentioning, or are there others? Yeah. On the other hand, Tosfos says that no, you don't have any kind of locust that has all these four simanim plus is from the family of Chagav, which is not already included in one of the eight that we mentioned. It's not really a question how many more species there are that are mutter, except for the question of whether they have a long head or not, where, again, according to Tana Dvei Rav, the ones with long heads are not kosher because they're not similar to the other ones. And according to Tana Dvei Rav Shmuel, there are, because as long as they have the four simonim and are from the family of Chagav, then we're okay.
Yeah, exactly. Because the
quote. Because they say a quala prophet quala, right? Yeah, exactly. Okay. Fine. Okay, now let's go back to the Braisa. Omar, we said in the Braisa, Ishmoy Chogov Yochol Enboy Kolasimon and Amalu. So we said, ultimately, Tonin Vera Bishmol had said that again. We have the Arbe, the Solom, and the Chargil, which between the three of them, we learn the four simonim that kosher locusts have to have. Then we said, so why does it mention the chogov? To tell us that the locust has to be called chogov in order to be kosher. So then we said, well, then maybe if we said, if you're saying that if the name is chogov means kosher, maybe it would be good enough, though, even if it doesn't have the simonim. Talmud loyma l'minehu. That is why it finishes off l'minehu, which means ad sheyu b'kol simonim alolu. Only if it also, in addition to being called Chogov, also has all these simonim. So that's the Braisa. So now let's ask on that. What do you mean, Ein Boi Kol HaSimonim Alolu? Mehechitesi. Where are you going to get? Where would you even think to say that because it's called Chogov, that should override everything else and it wouldn't matter whether it had the simonim? Where are you getting that from? Arba v'chargo k'siv. After all, it said arba and it said chargo, and we established before that from arba and chargo we learn that since those two have the four simanim, then all other kosher locusts do also have to have them also. So why would we think all of a sudden at this stage in the Braisa that once you have that it's called chogov, that should be good enough, and we can then and within chogov we can throw out all the other simanim? Where are you getting that from? The fact is,
chogov has less significance than other names.
Fine. The Braisa had said that you need both, that you need the simonim, but the simonim are not enough, otherwise crickets would be mutter, and therefore we said it also needs to be called chogov. But the problem with that, then the Braisa had said, well, then maybe it means that all it needs is to be called chogov. It doesn't matter whether it has the four simonim. No, the word l'minehu after chogov tells us that not. Why would you think, even if we didn't have the word l'minehu after chogov, why would we think all of a sudden that chogov without four simonim is good enough? The fact is, it's not like Araban, it's not like Chargo then. The answer is, Eloi Ksiv Solom Kidakamra. True. If it didn't mention the second type, the Solom, in the Pasuk, then you're right. The fact that it mentions Araba and Chargo alone would be enough to tell us that you need the four simonim. And that just...
We knew everything before, right. Solom.
Right. Hash the Dichtiv Solom, but once we have the Solom mention, and we discussed yesterday that Rabbi Choi had explained that L'Rabuye Rosh Aruch, that we said that the Solom comes to include also the case of locusts that have long heads, even though we said the Solom itself doesn't have a long head, but Im Eina Inyan Lakan, Tnei Inyan Lakan, because otherwise we didn't need the Solom. There's no characteristic that it doesn't share with either the Arba or the Chargo. Ema Lurbi Nami Kolderhu. Now that we have the Solom, maybe we would think the same way as we're including ones with long heads, maybe we can also include anything else, including if they don't have the four simonim. That is why, Kamash Malon, that is why the Braisa needs to tell us, that's why you need the word Leminehu after Chogov to tell you that not. So in other words, what we come out with is like, it must have the four simonim, being called Chogov is not enough. So in other words, we're saying like this. From Arba and Chargol, we're learning that it has to have the four simonim, and that it doesn't matter whether it has hair in front or it doesn't have hair in front or whether it has or whatever. From Solom, we're learning that it also doesn't matter if it has a long head or not, as long as it has. We said the Solom itself doesn't have a long head, but in the Latan. It also doesn't matter whether it has a tail or not, because we said that the Chargol has the Arba and the Arba doesn't. But what we said is that based on that, because you have Arba and Chargil, therefore now you know everything else has to have four simonim, because those two have that in common. But on the other hand, we brought in Solom, which makes us think now... We didn't need, and Nirvah Choy clarified that for us, right? So now we know we're including long-headed ones. So now you would think in that case, fine, so we said Chogov, meaning that has to be called Chogov. Once we have that, though, we would think we should take the combination of Chogov and Solom and say, basically, Chogov teaches us it has to be called Chogov. Solom teaches us it doesn't matter what its physical characteristics are. And therefore it should be mutter. No, the Minehu at the end comes to tell us, don't think that way. It does have to have the four simonim. Otherwise, no good. It's true that a long head doesn't matter. It's true that hair in the front or not doesn't matter. It's true that a tail or lack of one doesn't matter, but the four simonim matter. Plus also the name Chagav.
That's why it has to say the Minehu
at the end. Otherwise, we would have mistaken the
explanation. three times the meaning.
No, so we did. The Tanan Rabbi Shmuel had said. Some of them are indeed teaching us subspecies that are mutter. The Luminehu by the Arba. Right. So we have, there's four times Lumino and Luminehu that it says in those Sukkim. So three of them teach us subspecies that are mutter. And the fourth one teaches us that any locust to be kosher has to have the four simonim bar none. There's no exception to that.
Three times to learn something.
Because we have three different subspecies. Because you have Tsipotus kromin, which is similar to an arba, and Ushkaf, which is similar to the Solom, and Karsephus and Shachlonis, that are similar to the Chargo.
So we need three times
to include those, yeah.
Uh-huh. The fourth
Luminehu is not to teach us another specific species. It's to teach us any species is kosher as long as it has the four simonim plus also its kolcha. Right. Okay. Fine. One last thing we have to clear up. Maishna hosam de amrit solom de rosha and chargo de nipple. In the first bright, the Tanad Rav, we identified the solom of the pasuk as what's called in later times roshon, and we identified the chagol as what's called in later times nipple. That's fine, because okay, the language has changed. Yeah, language has changed over time. What was called solom in the time of the Torah was called roshon in later times. That's not a big deal. But the problem is, ma'ishna hocha damit solom the nipple, chagol the roshon. But in the second bright, in Tanad Rav Shmuel, we flipped around the definitions. We said the solom is identified with the nipple, and the chagol is identified with the roshon. So what is it? Yeah, and then in the first bright, it said the other way around. So what is it? Is what we call roshon in the times of the Tanoim, is that what the Torah called solom, or is that what the Torah called chagol? The answer is Marki Asri or Marki Asri. The answer is that each Tana spoke using the expressions, using the terminology that are used in his places.
So they changed in
different places. They called these creatures by different names. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says that what Tana Dvei Rav calls Roshon, in Rabbi Shmuel's area they called Nipo, and vice versa. It happens sometimes, even nowadays. You have, for example, in different parts of the English-speaking world, you have this, the same creature will be called by different names in America versus in England. You have a woodchuck is called by a different name. It's called like a marmot or something in England. Yeah, you have a number of things like that where you have the names differ between one place and another.
That's the same language.
Yeah. Another example, not specifically with animals, but you have to consider the word corn, for example. Here in this country, it means the stuff that grows on stalks and has yellow kernels. In England, the word corn means wheat. Maybe in more modern English, not so much so because of globalization. But actually the original meaning of corn is grain. So basically, in each place in the world, corn means whatever the most common grain is in that part of the world. Yeah, look at the old English translations of Chumash, for example. You have, for example, in the King James Version or whatever, you know, what do they translate in Pare's dream over there, that he sees seven ears of corn growing, right? Seven fat ears of corn and then seven skinny ones. Not corn as in maize, that's native to America. Pare never saw that in his dream. It means wheat. But in British English, corn means wheat.
They had corn in England?
No, that's the point. They use the word corn to mean wheat. They used it to mean whatever the most common grain was in that part of the world. And in England, in the 1600s, that would have been wheat. Nowadays also, I guess, certainly. Okay. So, yeah. So, you have different, right. So, you have different places. You have different places call things by different names. Okay. Fine.
Is that an example, you know?
I'm sure we can think of other examples if we were to think of them. But, yeah. Okay. Rashi finishes off, by the way, at this point, before we're done with the matter of locusts. Rashi takes a moment over here to mention, by the way, you should know that locusts, the kosher locusts, don't require shechita. They don't require shechita.
So
we know behema and oif need shechita, but since the pasuk mentions them in the order, those turtles have behema ba oif. So the last two in the list refer to fish and locusts. So just like fish don't need shechita, neither do locusts.
Maybe we already said it, but where do we know the fish on the Shechita?
So that the Gemara dealt with earlier in the Masechta, actually, precisely that, because you have like this. Okay, actually, the Gemara said we learn it from the fact that the Pasuk describes gathering fish in it's called Geayam Yosef Lahem, rather than using a word that implies Shechita. So that implies that for that fish, all you need to do is gather them. You don't need to shech them.
What
so therefore, it actually brings from the halachas gzolos that since locusts are mentioned after fish, then the same rule applies to them. Not so much a greater shava, but once, in other words, the pasuk is starting with things that need shechita and then continuing with the ones that don't. So since it put locusts after fish, that means they're in the same category. If fish don't need shechita, neither do locusts. Other rishonim also point out that you have other sources for it also. You have a pasuk in Yeshaya that mentions also oiset achasel, the gathering of locusts, implying that also all they need to do is be gathered.
Yeah. I think your shechita is
in principle, if you had to do a shechita, then you would. You would take a small knife and then chop off a head. But as actually, now that I think of it, some of them approach and say another reason why it shouldn't need shechita is because the whole concept of shechita is to cut the two simonim, the windpipe and the esophagus. Locusts don't breathe in the same way as mammals and birds. They don't eat in the same way. So I don't know if they have lungs, but whatever. They don't have necessarily an esophagus and a windpipe that correspond to those in larger animals. So therefore, that would be another reason they don't need shechita. Okay, fine. Okay. Now let's talk about fish. The Mishnah had said of a dogim kol sheyesh le snap and paskeses. When it comes to fish, any ones that have been
before,
yeah.
It says behem other eyes.
And then it says, "Olachol nefesh achaya hashereses b'moyim." Any living creatures that swarm in the water, olachol chaya hashereses ala ores, and any creature that swarms on the ground.
So you could olachol nefesh hashereses ala ores.
No, that's the point. Because it lists them in that order, and we know already from another pasuk, the imes kol geayam yeosit, that fish don't need shechita, since the chol nefesh hashereses ala ores, the locust, are mentioned only after the fish. That means, in other words, by that point, the pasuk is done with things that need shechita. Only the ones mentioned earlier in the pasuk require shechita, animals and birds.
It's fine that if the shechatim were before the fish, then they would.
Then maybe they would, yeah. Okay, but they aren't. So, yeah.
No, they aren't.
Fine. Over dogim kol sheyesh le snap and paskeses, we said with fish, the ones that are kosher are the ones that have fins and scales. So, turn it up. Why don't we learn in a braisa? Ein loy achshav, suppose that the fish does not have scales or fins, for that matter, now. But also the gadol achazman, but it's going to develop them later. There's going to sultanis va'achion, which are different types of small fish. Rashi translates one of them as tunina, which I guess means tuna fish.
Okay.
Anyway, so they don't have scales when they're little, but they develop them later. Hareza mutter, it's mutter even now that it hasn't developed the scales yet, because that min does have scales. Yesh le achshav va'osid la'ashiran b'shal sha'olam en amayim. What if the other way around? What if it has scales now, but eventually when you catch it, when you pull it out of the water, then it sheds its scales? Shigoin akunas va'afunas ksakias va'aktasias va'atunas. Different kinds of fish. Rashi says these are all words in Persian. Hareza mutter, then they're also mutter. One interesting thing to mention about a couple of these.
Pull them under the water, they lose their scales.
There are certain kinds of fish. They're actually now. Nowadays, zoologists don't know of any fish that do that. But it could be that they were fish that were known in those times that do. But also, a couple of interesting ones in this list. First of all, the last one on the list is atunas, which the pastor is also a tuna fish. But
the third
tuna over there, right? I don't know. I think it's pretty much worldwide. Distribution. Some variety of tuna or other. Anyway, yeah, it was definitely, I don't know if anywhere necessarily, but whatever. It was definitely known in those parts of the world. Okay. The third and fourth.
These are examples of fish
that shed their scales when they're taken out of when they're fished out of the water, right?
Okay.
So the third and fourth one on this list, Ksaphias and Akstaphias, are a little bit interesting. One or the other of those seems to be, many people think, that seems to be the Gemara's version of the Greek word ziphias, or ksiphias, whatever, which would be a swordfish. So does that mean that swordfish are kosher? So in fact, there is actually a great deal of discussion about that. Well, swordfish have fins, no question about that. Whether they have scales is an interesting point. Now, there were a lot of Jewish communities around the Mediterranean that used to eat them. And you have actually the Knesset Hagdola writes in his Chuvus. He mentions a fish called Espada, which was eaten by Jews. And the obvious possibility is that Espada is swordfish, in which case it would mean that there's a Masada on it. And it used to actually be. I read a couple of interesting articles about this. It used to be fairly well accepted in the Jewish world that swordfish is kosher. Now, adult swordfish, you find them, you don't find scales on them. So what does it mean? Does it mean that they shed them? Does it mean they shed them when they're caught? So I actually read a story as a kid along the lines of like that, where somewhere a Rav does an experiment by putting a scarf into a net where they're going to be catching swordfish, and afterwards find scales in it that they fling off when they're fighting to avoid being caught. Zoologists nowadays don't know of any such thing. What they have found is that apparently that baby swordfish, juvenile swordfish, have some kind of scales, which later on, as the swordfish gets older, those develop into something not scale-like, basically. So the question is that the same thing as the Gemara is describing over here? Does that mean that they're mutter? So actually, it turns out that actually the fact that we generally nowadays accept that swordfish are not kosher actually goes back to apparently Moshe Tendler around 1950 did some research on it, found that swordfish don't seem to have scales, and nothing about this business of them shedding them when they're caught, because that doesn't happen, and therefore he argued they ought to be osur, and pretty much all the poskim accepted his findings, and therefore that's why in general you don't find kosher swordfish nowadays. Okay. So you have some people who argue, you have, for example, Nosson Slifkin argues that after all that's not really a very solidly grounded thing, and maybe in principle there should be mutter. The Gemara mentions that there's some However, on Omar Aleph, it brings over here from a Tosfos in Avodah Zarah that says, since the Pasuk says that you can't eat the Cholasher Ein Loi Snapper V'Chaskesen, that does not have fins and scales, but the word Ein Loi we can darshan, as the Gemara does in a few places, that Ein Loi, we also darshan as Ayin Olav, check into it. If you find, meaning in other words, the same way as, for example, by Yibum, where it says Ubein Ein Loi, and it means not just if he has sons, but also if he has daughters, also if he has great, 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 great grandchildren, then you don't do Yibum or Chalitza. The same way over here, as long as at some point in the fish's life, it has scales and it has fins, from Ein Loi, which we darshan as Ayin Olav. So as far as the business with swordfish, if you say that the swordfish is one of these ones, the Ksathias or the Aksathias of the Gemara, then that would be a reason to argue that it's kosher. If you say this business about that they have some kind of scales when they're juvenile and then they develop into something else when they're adult, that might also be a factor. But the Frum world in general has accepted this thing of Moshe Tendler's that there's no basis for saying that it has a Masada, and therefore we don't eat it.
That's the only example of fish?
No, there's many examples. Oh, that's not, is it the only example of fish that what?
Mackerel fish.
Mackerel? So what about mackerel? Mackerel don't have scales when they're young, but they develop them when they're older. That was the first ones, and that was the first. That's fine. When you buy fish actually it's an interesting point, because actually, you know, the Gemara is not really specifying what kind of scales it has to be. From the Gemara, it would be mashma any kind of scales are fine. The Ramban points out that the definition of scales, given where the Gemara is going to say, where we learn what kaskesis means, it means they have to be removable from the skin without tearing the skin. And that's universally accepted by halacha. The scales have to be removable from the skin without tearing it. So they do scale fish. When you go buy fish at Raskin's or whatever, you don't necessarily have them. They don't necessarily you don't necessarily sell it to you with the scales on. They may take the scales off first. Fine, that doesn't matter as long as you can trust the seller, which in that case you can. Yeah, but you have fish that don't have scales when they're young and then develop them when they're older. That's fine. Like I was saying over here. But this is the other way around, that they have scales and then they shed them when they're caught. Zoologists don't know of any such thing nowadays. But mackerel don't lose their scales when they're caught, I don't think. Okay,
what happens if we find new species?
Same thing. You don't need a Masada for fish. All you need is that they have fins and scales. So as long as they have scales that meet the Ramban's criteria that are removable from the skin, then mind you, you actually have the Noda B'Yehuda actually has a tshuva about sturgeon, where sturgeon, the scales are not easily removable. However, he found that, like, if he soaked it in a chemical solution for a couple of hours, then he was able to peel them off. So he held that's good enough. The Noda B'Yehuda held that's good enough. Many other poskim disagree with him. Lamaisa, the consensus is that it's not, but the Noda B'Yehuda, because they said that peelable means, come on, you have to, before you soak it in chemicals or whatever, we're talking about, fine, maybe you leave it out in the sun, maybe you soak it in water for a little bit. The Noda B'Yehuda,
we said
they have to be removable from the skin without tearing it. Right. So the Noda B'Yehuda found you can remove these scales from sturgeon without tearing the skin, but only if you soak it in a solution for a couple of hours. He held that's enough. Otherwise, it would tear. He held that's enough. Many other posts, many other achronim disagreed with him. Okay. Let's go on.
That's like adding a
simon. It's not adding a simon. No, it's not adding nothing. The Torah says kaskesef, and it's not. Kaskesef means scales, and that Ramban explains based on the Gemara that we're going to have now that scales implies that they're not part of the skin, but rather they're scales on top of the skin.
Okay.
So therefore, yeah.
So, but when did you get the skin shouldn't be torn?
Because if the skin is torn, then they're part of the skin, and they're not on top of it. Then they're just projections from the skin. Let's learn the Gemara and we'll see. Okay, first of all, Tanan Hossam. Now, we learn in a Mishnah in Nida that you really don't need two simonim, technically, because kol she yeshle kaskeset yeshle snapper, any fish that has scales automatically also has fins.
Okay.
The yeshle snapper ain't like kaskeset. But you have some, there are some fish that are the other way around. They have fins, but they don't have scales, and those are not kosher. So, yeshle kaskeset. Yeah, sharks would be an example. Yeah. Catfish, yeah. So, yeshle kaskeset v'yeshle snapper. So, if it has scales and it has fins, good, then dog tahor, then it's a tahor fish. Yeshle snapper v'yeshle kaskeset, but if it has fins but it doesn't have scales, dog tome, then it's a non-kosher fish. Well, hold on. Okay. The question is, so if that's the case, if all we need is scales, and we say once it has scales, automatically we know it has fins, then the question becomes, given that we're relying exclusively on scales, because we say once it has scales, we know automatically it has fins. We don't even have to check for the fins. Well, then, lichtiv rachmana kaskeses loyalistiv snapper. Why does the pasuk mention two simonim? Let the pasuk only say that the fish needs kaskeses. No. Why should it? Right? But why? Once we know that anything that has... you have to explain. You have to try to figure out. Tosfos actually asked the question, how b'chlal do we know that anything that has kaskeset has snapper? And so Tosfos says that maybe Tosfos gives a couple of possibilities. Is it possible maybe that it's a tradition handed down from Adam? Adam named all the creatures. Okay, he didn't name the fish. Maybe he named the fish, maybe he didn't. But the other possibility is halacha l'moshe mitzvah. Whatever it is, the question is, why is the pasuk mentioning fins if we don't need them? We don't even need to check the name. The answer is ikos of rachmana kaskeses, while ikos of snapper, because if the pasuk only wrote the word kaskeses and did not write snapper, you would misunderstand. Haba amina my kaskeses snapper. You would misunderstand and think that the word kaskeses means fins. Therefore, after the dog tummy, and then you're going to end up being master fish that are not kosher, like the catfish. Therefore, kos of rachmana snapper the kaskeses. Therefore, the pasuk mentions them both. Well, because you wouldn't know maybe what the definition of kaskeses is, especially because Tosfos points out earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara is going to explain in a second that the word kaskeses means a covering, like a covering of scales, but more fundamentally it means something with ridges, like, so therefore the fins also have ridges. So you could think that's what it means. So once it says, they're ridges, they're overlapping ridges of scales. So, therefore, once it says snapper the kaskeses, then that makes it clear. Now you know one of them has to be fins and the other one, therefore, has to be scales. So the question is, mahash the kalsa rachmana snapper the kaskeses. Okay, so now the pasuk writes both words. How does that help you? Mamimai the kaskeses lavoshu. Okay, but how does that tell you that the word kaskeses means the scales that cover the body of the fish? The answer is
it has to cover the body of the fish?
What do the scales do? The scales cover the body. So how do we know that the word kaskeses refers to something that covers the body? How do we know? Maybe the other way around. Maybe snapper means the scales and kaskeses means the fins. How do you know that not? The reason is dichtiv v'shirian kaskasim hu lavush, because we have a pasuk in Shmuel describing the giant Goliath that it says that he was wearing a coat of scale armor. So therefore, so we see, and that's how they made armor in those days, is a bunch of overlapping scales, where you have like the garment itself was made with holes in it, and then you have like a scales of metal covering over the...
Way after Matan Torah.
No, apparently they... No, but then, Goliath is way after Matan Torah, sure, but they still spoke the same language. So
exactly.
They still spoke the same language. So once we're bringing up proof from the pasuk in Lashon Kodesh. So therefore, in other words, if we find that the Jewish people spoke the same language in the time of Shmuel as they did in the time of Tanakh, in the time of Chumash. So therefore, if the pasuk refers to Goliath and says that he was wearing the Shirian Kaskasim, so we know from that, therefore, that the word Kaskasis in the Torah also means skin.
Otherwise,
you wouldn't know, yeah. So the question is, after all, the list of Rachmana Kaskasis, the list of Snapper. Well, now that you've clarified that, now we're back to the question then. You don't need the word Snapper. We thought before you need to write Snapper and you need to write Kaskasis, because otherwise you would misunderstand and think that Kaskasis means the fin. But now that you have the pasuk in Shmuel that tells you that the word Kaskasis means scales, so you're back to, you shouldn't need Snapper. The answer is Amar Rav Abo, v'chein Tonet, v'chein Rav Shmuel. So Rav Abo says, and we also learn in a braisa of the yeshiva of Rav Shmuel, you're right. The reason is Yagdil Torah v'Yadir. Hashem wanted to make the Torah greater and more glorious. In other words, the Torah added a detail in order that we should be absolutely clear what the Kaskasis is. That's Tosafot explains. Hashem tells us extra reasons, extra things in the pasuk, Leida Mao Kaskasis, in order that we should clearly know what Kaskasis is. The Ritva, actually, on the Gemara in Nida, which is where we get the Mishnah that we quoted before about Kol Sheyesh LeKaskasis, Yesh LeSnapper, he explains, the Vort is, it's true, we don't technically need the Snapper. The Ritva is giving an explanation of what we mean by Yagdol Torah V'Yadu. What does the Gemara mean with that explanation? He says what it means is like this. It's true. The Gemara had a valid point. It shouldn't have needed to write Snapper. However, the fact remains that a Snapper is a Siman Torah. The fact of the matter is that a kosher fish does have fins and does have scales. It's true the Pasuk could have just written scales and automatically we would know fins, as the Gemara just said. Nevertheless, the Torah wrote the word Snapper as well, because the fact of the matter is it is a Siman Torah, and therefore the Pasuk wanted to include it as well. And in fact, also you have Achronim talk about, I think the Shalach Kodesh talk about, but there's also, the Gemara also, but with the words Yagdol Torah V'Yadu, also means to imply, okay, on the Pshat level, maybe there's not a reason for the Snapper. But after all, the Pasuk mentioned it and gave it as a Siman Torah, because on other levels of Torah, on Remez, on Drush, on Tzoid, there are reasons why fins are a Siman Torah for a fish.
Why don't we say more simply that since the Torah uses the order of Kaskeset,
it doesn't. I put Snapper.
Snapper
in there.
Yeah. When you have Snapper, then you have Kaskeset. But when you have Kaskeset, you don't necessarily have Snapper.
But it's not that way. It's the other way around. And as Tosafot said, either they learned it from Adam Rishon or it's Halacha L'Moshe Mesinai. That's the other way around. When it has Kaskeset, automatically it has Snapper, but the reverse is not true. Snapper does not automatically imply Kaskeset. You actually have, by the way, in that connection, as far as a drush level reason why it has to mention Snapper and Kaskasis, there is actually a sicha where the Rebbe talks about one of many explanations, and you have other you have many different farshim, different achronim who give different symbolic explanations, but the Rebbe's explanation is like this: fins on a fish are what it moves around with in the water. So therefore, that represents, by a Talmud Chacham is like a fish, like in the famous story of Rabbi Akiva and Papus Ben Yehuda, we're like fish in the water. So the fins on a fish represent a Talmud Chacham's ability fins on a fish represent the Talmud Chacham's ability to be mechadish chedushim, to come up with new ideas in Torah, like to swim around in the Yam HaTalmud. Right. Kaskeset scales on a fish protect it from the elements around it. That's a covering over its body, as we just said. And maybe it makes it easier to swim, but the main point is it covers its body. Therefore, in terms of a Talmud Chacham, that represents the Yiras Shemayim that a Talmud Chacham has to have to preserve its Torah. The famous thing that is in the Gemara Shabbos, that you have the learning Torah is like grain stored away in the granary, but you have to have Kav Chumten, you have to have Yiras Shemayim mixed in with it, otherwise it's spoiled. So therefore, the vort is, if... No, I don't remember if it ever quotes the stories in the Sikha, but the basic idea is in the Sikha. But the idea is Kol Sheyeshle
brings this in a Sikha.
Yes, so therefore the basic idea is Kol Sheyeshle Kaskesis Yeshle Snafir. If you have somebody who has the Kaskesis, who has the Yiras Shemayim, eventually he can develop the Snafir. He can develop the abilities to be able to be Mechadish Chedushim and to be able to learn independently like a fish swimming around. But if he has only Snafir, not necessarily does he have Kaskesis. If he has that good head and the ability to be Mechadish, but he's lacking the Yiras Shemayim, that's no good. So that's a reason. I don't remember. But that's a reason that's a Yagdol Torah B'Yadu reason why, even though it didn't have to mention Snafir, the Pasuk mentions it anyway to teach us this lesson.
Snafir alone
will not bring to Kaskesis. Kaskesis can bring to Snafir. The Yiras Shemayim can bring to the ability to be Mechadish. Yeah. But not the other way around. We're learning from the Simone Tara that a similar concept as it applies to people. Now, before we get to the Tanan Abanan, which is actually going to be starting a new topic, let's talk about briefly. So we said that Kol Sheyeshle Snafir Yeshle Kaskesis. So now let's read an interesting thing that the Tosfos Yom Tov wrote. The Tosfos Yom Tov, we know him as the Tosfos Yom Tov because that's the name of his Pirush on Mishnayos. But he also wrote a number of other Sfarim. Among them are notes on the Rosh, in the back of the Gemara, dealing with practical halacha and dealing with analyzing what the Rosh says and how it comes out of practical halacha. So he writes like this. It became a famous thing among the Acharonim. The Rosh's son is the Tur, yes. That's fine. The Rosh wrote these notes in the back of the Gemara where he summarizes what the halacha is and discusses how the halacha as extracted from the Gemara and from the Gaonim and from the Uli Rishonim and whatever. So the Tosfos Yom Tov wrote a pirush on it called Madana Yom Tov. The Tosfos Yom Tov was a few hundred years later. We didn't really ask. So the Tosfos Yom Tov writes like this. He says, I'll translate it.
He was in Poland, right? Part
of his time he was in Poland, and then later on he was at one point he was the Rav of Vienna, at one point he was the Rav of Prague, he got around a bit. Anyway, he says, when I was Av Beis Din and Rosh Masivta in Vienna, the Chacham Rav Aaron, the doctor, brought me a fish which is called in the language of the Goyim, the Pashtus in Latin, it's called Stinkus Marinus. It's found in the Spanish Sea. I don't know whether he means the water around Spain or whether he means the waters around the Caribbean, but whatever. It's found in those waters. It's poisonous. Doctors know how to get the poison out of it. Then they use its flesh and make various kinds of medicines out of it. Now, the Tosfos Yom Tov continues. This creature has a spine, which the Gemara mentions in Avodah Zarah, that typically non-kosher fish don't have a bony spine. They usually have cartilage. Non-kosher fish, like catfish, for example, and sharks and whatever, have cartilage instead of bones in their spine. This creature has a spine made out of bones. It has a wide head, which the Gemara mentions there in Avodah Zarah, is usually also the sign of a kosher fish. It has scales all over its body. It doesn't have any fins. It has four legs. So this from Aaron Roifa asked me. That's it.
Four legs.
It has four legs. Yeah.
So he says it's a fish.
Hold on. So the Tosfos Yom Tov writes. So this from Aaron Roifa asked me about what's going on with this. If you consider these legs as if they were scales, which would imply that this is a kosher, creature, what do you mean? You can't tell us that the Torah would make it possible for us to eat a poisonous creature. And then he goes on to say that at first the Tosfos Yom Tov says I was surprised by it. I didn't know what to answer. Then after a while he says I answered, maybe it's a crossbreed. Maybe this species did not exist as such before Matan Torah. Maybe it was crossbred from other species later on. And he gives examples of that. So therefore, it wouldn't contradict the rule that we're saying over here, Kol Sheyeshle Kaskesis, Yeshle Snafir, because that rule was true at the time of Matan Torah. Later on, they might have crossbred other species, he says. Then he says, one second. Then he goes on to say, then I thought of a better answer, he says, that he explains the psukim that basically you have. It's not that every kind of creature that lives in the water, as long as it has fins and scales, is kosher, or that it has scales, it automatically has fins. There, you have fish, and then you have other kinds of creatures that live in the water. So in this case, this Stinkus marinus, okay, it has scales, it has no fins. But it's not a dog, it's not a fish. It has legs, so therefore it's a water creature, fine, but it's not a fish, so therefore it's not included. It's not included in that rule. The rule of our Gemara, Kol She Yeshle Kaskeset, Yeshle Snapper, would only be as far as fish. That's the Tosfos Yom. No. It had Kaskeset, it had scales, and it had feet. Now, that's the Tosfos Yom.
It didn't have fins,
right? So, but the original question was that our Gemara is telling us here, Kol She Yeshle Kaskeset, Yeshle Snapper. So how does this not violate that rule? So again, the Tosfos Yamtsev's first answer is he thought maybe it's a later course breed, and his second answer is the rule only applies to fish.
It doesn't apply.
Right now. No. That's the point. The point is that before they're able to make medicines out of it after they remove the poison. The question was, is it kosher? Before, is it kosher if they don't make medicines out of it? If you remove the poison somehow, and then you want to eat the fish, would you be not as medicinal, just as a regular thing to eat? Would you be allowed to? So, but even medicine is it depends. Is it, what is it a medicine for? Is it for something that's sakonas nefoshes? Is it derech achila? Whatever. Anyway, that was the Tosfos Yamtsev. Now you have there ended up being a lively discussion about this among the achronim later on, and different other achronim talked about this and gave different answers. Among them are the for example, Rabbi Yonasan Eidershit says maybe the rule in our Gemara is not 100% absolute. Every rule has exceptions. Maybe this is the exception. Although other achronim ask on him in that case, unless the Gemara asks him that you don't need snapper, in that case you do. There's different other answers, including one practical one is that I believe the Chassam Sofer says this. Maybe after all, the animal was misidentified. It's not actually a sea creature at all. It lives near the sea. It lives on the beaches over there. It's a lizard. So therefore, of course, the rule of the Gemara doesn't apply over here because we're talking about sea creatures. We're not talking about creatures that live on the land near. Well, even if we
have sea creatures that are not fish,
that's the point. In other words, the Tosfos Yamtsev was making that distinction between fish and other sea creatures. But you could say, besides that, this year of Aaron arose, but it thought that this creature is lived in the water, and it turned out that he was mistaken. It actually lives on land. What?
Was he alluding?
No. Well, he wasn't specifically mentioning. Well, those don't have fins and scales anyway, so it's neither here nor there. Okay, that's They don't have scales. Crustaceans don't have scales. They have shells. They don't have scales. It's a whole different thing. Okay, so that's some of the discussion that went on in about the last 300-400 years since the Tosfos Yamtsev wrote this on all the pros and cons. The Tosfos Yamtsev calls it Stinkus marinus. Nowadays they have a different scientific name for it. It's some kind of lizard in English. It still exists. It's called a skink in English. I don't know if nowadays they use it for medicine. I've got still, but maybe. Okay. Go ahead. All right. Let's go on. Okay. So now we're gonna digress from fish and talk about fish, but we're also gonna be starting to talk about other kinds of water creatures. Turn on a button. Given that the pasuk is telling us that you can eat fish that have fins and scales, automatically that would mean, and if they don't have fins and scales, then you can't eat them. And vice versa. So you have a pasuk that tells us don't eat anything that doesn't have fins and scales. Automatically that would mean if it has fins and scales, you could eat it. The lama shnan, so why do we have both? Why do we have both an esse and a lois esse on the pasuk? The reason is in the Pesukim, in Parshas Shemini, it says that it starts off by saying over there, as zeh toichlo mikol asher b'moyim, kol asher lo snapev chaskeses b'mayim b'yamim b'nacholim oisim teichelu, v'chol asher ein lo snapev chaskeses b'yamim b'nacholim kol asher t'mayim, etc. Right, so once you have one, automatically you could deduce the other one from it. Why do you have both? The reason is lava ola b'esav aloisese. The reason is because if a person eats a non-kosher fish, then he's over on both an esse and a loisese. So, in fact, the Rambam actually he'd be chayv malchus for the loisa, so he wouldn't be chayv anything for the esse.
Right.
But the Rambam actually learns that the esse over here is actually, and he learns this not only as far as the fish, but as far as all the different kinds of life forms. For each one, the Rambam lists four mitzvahs asay. One, to check the simonim of a behemah or a chaya before you eat it. Two, to check the simonim of an oif. Three, to check the simonim of a fish. Four, to check the simonim of a locust before you eat it. The Rambam understands that those are actual mitzvahs asay. To actually check, yeah. Most of the, we don't eat locusts nowadays, but fine, if you're going to eat them. Most of the other Rishonim disagree with the Rambam on that. They hold these are not mitzvahs as you have to check the simonim before. In the case, but rather what it means is they're an essay in the sense, as the Gemara is saying over here, if a person were to eat a non-kosher fish, he's over not only on the lois essay, don't eat ones without fins and scales, he's also over on the essay, eat ones with fins and scales, which implies also. It means that he's done two averus. It means that when he comes to doing tshuva, he's going to have to do tshuva. The Torah says you can eat the ones that have fins and scales. Automatically, that implies that if you're eating something without fins and scales, then you're not doing that mitzvah saseh.
The one
in. And then you also have the explicit lois saseh. Right. So again,
if you don't do a mitzvah, you get an avera for not doing the mitzvah. You just fit into the mitzvah.
It depends. But sometimes yes. Sometimes. I mean, look, if a person doesn't put on tefillin, right, the over on a mitzvah saseh. Yeah. So again, the Rambam holds that these are actual mitzvah saseyas, and you have a mitzvah saseh to do such and such, to check the simonim of the fish before you eat it. Most of the other Rishonim understand it's not a mitzvah saseh of that kind. All it is, it's a mitzvah saseh in the sense that if a person violates it, then he's violated it, but there's no actual way to be mekayim. They learn. Yeah. Okay. So that's what it is. Lava all of the essa of a loisa, and you have that in many mitzvahs where you have an essa and a loisa and then. But what it would mean, for example, is let's say a person did that, he ate a non-kosher fish. So what is it? So what do we say? That with mitzvah say he has to do tshuva, and then loizos mishama shemosomo, then Hashem immediately forgives him, as opposed to mitzvah loisa where you need tshuva toil of yemekipurim machaper. So it would mean nowadays when there's no Malkus, it would mean that he'd have to do tshuva on both. In the times when there was Malkus, it would mean the Malkus would clean up the lois essay, but he'd still have to do tshuva for the essay and maybe even bring an ola for it, as the Gemara discusses in Tzvachim. Yeah. Okay. Next, continues the Braisa. Okay, so now what about the part of the pasuk that goes that you can eat anything that's in the water that has fins and scales? Now you have the pasuk goes like this: as zeh tochlo mikol hashev amoyim, these you can eat from anything that's in the water. Kol hashev yeshlo snap of a kaskasis b'mayim b'yamim b'nacholim oisam techelu, them you can eat. So twice in the pasuk it says that you can eat them. So why do we need both of them? It should be enough just to have the one at the end, that anything that with fins and scales you can eat. So, like this, sheyochol, because if you didn't have those words, you would think like this. Hoyo v'hitter v'mefordash v'hitter v'stam. So you have like this. You have a heter. You have a heter in the pasuk explicitly for certain. Now, okay. We have to understand. We have to realize that the pasuk is describing over here like this. You have fish. Not really a proper fall. We haven't gotten to that yet. But you have like this. Keep in mind, you have in water. You mind bringing us over a chumash, please? Thank you. You have like this. The pasuk is describing over there fish that you need. They need to have fins and scales in order to eat them. But you also have the pasuk, and that connection is mentioning sheret hamayim, which means things that crawl around in the water. That would include things like worms that develop in water and other such things. From anything that swarms around in the water, or mikol nefesh chaya shabamayim, or any other living creatures that are in the water, sheket hay mochem. So now you have the Braisa telling us like this. That's the point. One second. But on the other hand, you have In the psukim, you have like this: the heter b'mefurish. You have an explicit heter in the psukim that, as I want to explain soon, where we get that explicit heter from. But we have an explicit heter that there are certain sheret hamayim that you are allowed to eat, even though they don't have fins and scales. That you have, we're going to see soon. The heter b'stam. Then you also have a heter which is not so clearly stated. So. So you would think, therefore, like this. The heter, that's explicit, is talking about creatures like worms or whatever in kalim. If you have it, in other words, the Gemara is going to start discussing soon. We're going to get into a whole discussion now about worms. That if you have worms that develop in water that's in a kali, you're allowed to drink them together with the water. Now, obviously, if you're disgusted by it, then not, because Baal Shachtu. But if you're living like in the olden times where they don't care about such things, then you would be allowed
to. Fall into a keli?
Not fall into. If they develop in the water in a keli.
Well, you don't
like the water, huh? Hold on. Hold that thought. But yeah. Okay. So mach shehitur b'mafurish lehitur ela b'kelim. Now the heter b'feirush is regarding water in kelim, and we know that, as the Gemara is going to proceed to explain, because the pasuk mentioned specifically by yamim of anacholim, mentioned specifically in the oceans or lakes or whatever, and in the rivers, meaning as opposed to kelim, implying therefore that ones that are in kelim, you are allowed to eat sheref amayim. So that's hitter b'mfurish. So after hitter b'stam lo hitter el b'kelim. So you would think that the hitter that stam, that's not as clearly specified, is also referring only to kelim. But you would think, as you would think, one hitter is much like another.
No.
So minayin l'rabas boris shichin umayris. How do we know to also include boris shichin umayris, which are different kinds of water pits in the ground? The boris are round, shichin are square, and myris have a cover over them, like a cave. So how do we know with those also that a person is allowed to bend down and drink water from such bodies of water? The einin nimna, and he doesn't have to worry that there are worms in there. How do we know that? Tamad loyma toichlo mikol asher b'moyim. That is why you have those extra words in the pasuk, as zeh toichlo mikol asher b'moyim, meaning heichen hitter b'kelim. So in other words, the Braita is saying that where do we have a heter to eat or to drink worms that developed in kelim? Dichtiv eszeh. One second, kelim first. Dichtiv. It's like this, because the pasuk says. So thus far the Braita. The Talmud Leimer Terchol Mikol Hashabamoyim. From those words, we're learning an extra heter. So in other words, we have a case where it's mutter to eat worms that developed in water in kelim, and we also have a case that we're saying that's mutter to also eat worms that developed in water, in still water, in boris, shichin, and myris, which are all water pits. There's no new water coming into them. There's whatever water you put into them originally is the water that stays there. So in that sense, they're like kelim, sort of. As opposed to moving bodies of water, those are yamim and nacholim, and those have a different rule, right? So let's analyze this. Heichen hitter b'kelim. Where do we find a heter for worms in kelim? Because the pasuk says this you can eat from anything that's in the water, etc. The following you can eat from anything that's in the water. Anything that has fins and scales, b'mayim, in the water, by yamim uvanecholim, that's in the seas or in the rivers. Meaning only in the seas and in the rivers do you have to have snapper b'kaskesis.
Right.
Only in the seas and in the rivers is it that if it has fins and scales, you can eat it, and if it doesn't have it, you can't. Only in lakes or oceans, whatever, and rivers. That you can only eat them with fins and scales, because that's a positive thing. The following you can eat from anything that's in the water. So the rule of snap of the cheskesis only applies by yamim of anacholim. Ha-b-kelim, in other words, the implication is that if the worms develop in kelim, even though they don't have fins and scales, you can still eat them. So that's the point. In other words, that's the heter b'mefodesh. That's a heter b'mefodesh, where since it says v'yamim v'anacholim, then it implies that the rule does not apply to kelim. In other words, you have like this. The heter b'mefodesh is the fact that the pasuk says that the rule of snapa b'chaskesis applies only by yamim v'anacholim, implying that if it's not in yamim v'anacholim, then you're allowed to eat them whether they have snapa b'chaskesis or not, as long as they developed in there and never left it, which the Gemara is going to deal with later. Then you have a heter that's stam. You have a heter that's less clear in the pasuk, namely that comes from the words eszeh toichlo mikol asher b'moyim. So we're saying that those two heterim are covering the same ground. Both of them are being matur us to eat wombs, one of them, well, actually, one of them is being master wombs that in Talim, and the other one is being master wombs that are in Bodas, Shichin, Umairis, which are man-made still bodies of water, as opposed to, we're going to discuss later, man-made moving bodies of water, or natural bodies of water.
Which one is talking?
So the Mefurish is talking about Talim, because Vayamim Manacholim clearly excludes Talim. And the other one, Ezer Teichlu, comes to include also, is also telling us Bodas, Shichin, Umairis.
Yami Monachalim also excludes Beres, and
that's true, but
why do we need that?
Because on the other hand, they are in the ground. That's the Gemara is going to deal with. The Gemara is going to deal with that. In a certain sense, they're like Yami Monachalim in the sense that they're in the ground. Kalim are completely distinct. Beres, Shichin, Umairis are holes in the ground.
They're holes in the ground.
Okay, that's fine, but they're still in a certain sense similar. So you need another Hetzer. But well, that's what the Gemara is going to be developing, this idea. So wait, okay. Okay, so the question is, Ema b'kelim afagav de islei loisechol, you're telling me that the pasuk is telling you by yamu v'nacholim, meaning as opposed to kelim, and you're saying that means that it means lakula, that if they don't have fins and scales but they're in kelim, you're allowed to eat them. Maybe it means the other way around. Maybe it means that in kelim, even a creature with fins and scales, you're not allowed to eat. So if you were to...
It means you are allowed to eat.
No. The Braisa told us that the fact that it says by Yamum and Nacholim means that fins and scales only applies in Yamum and Nacholim. It does not apply in Kalim. If you have worms that grow in Kalim, you're allowed to eat them. The question is, who says maybe the Pasuk is implying the other way around? If it's by Yamum and Nacholim, as long as it has fins and scales, you're good. If it's in Kalim, even with fins and scales, it's no good. In other words, if you were to have an aquarium at home and you grow in it fish that have fins and scales, maybe you wouldn't be allowed to eat them. How do you know? The answer is loisapadaita. You can't think that's what the pasuk means. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says v'chol asher em loisnapas hasketus by yamim manacholim. Because the next pasuk continues, anything that doesn't have fins and scales in the lakes and in the streams and in the rivers, mikol sheret amayim, from anything that creeps around in the water, meaning. By yamum vanacholim, de less loy lesechol, in the seas, in the lakes, and in the rivers, if they don't have the simonim, then you can't eat them. Ha bekelim apagav de less loy echol, implying, therefore, since you have the second pasuk as a miut, only where is by yamum vanacholim, where is it that by yamum vanacholim, where is it that you need simonim? Only by yamum vanacholim. Therefore, the implication is that in kelim you don't need them. Tosfos also points out, I mean, the Gemara still could have asked, that, okay, so which pasuk are we being more medayak from? But the thing is, the first pasuk mentions oisam techelu. So therefore, oisam implies only them, not others. So therefore, already you have something in there. Right, and then in the first pasuk, when it says, vayam manchom, oisam techelu, oisam b'layachayim. So you have that already. So therefore, we can say, So therefore we can say that even if the pasuk is being particular, since it says oisam, then therefore that means so we're left with that the first pasuk means that in kalim you're allowed to eat anything. Only the second pasuk is telling us therefore where do you need fins and scales by yamim v'nacholim. So therefore that's what we're left with. Therefore is if you're in kalim, it doesn't matter based on the second pasuk whether it has fins and scales. So now comes the question, as you said, we should have a klal of prat over here. The aim of a mayim klal, maybe you should say the word b'mayim is a klal, so anything that lives in the water you can eat. B'yamu v'nacholim prat, then you would have klal of prat, again, ein b'chlal elamash b'prat. So it would be only, the klal would only include what's specifically mentioned. Therefore, yamu v'nacholim ein ne'itzin b'charitzin loy. So that would mean that you would exclude kalim, you would even exclude charitzin u'ne'itzim, where charitzin u'ne'itzim are man-made bodies of water, but ones that have a current, ones where there's a flow in them. Charitzin, Rashi explains, on the next amud, charitzin are long and narrow, ne'itzin are wider. The point is, though, in other words, unlike Bodas, Shichin, Umairis, where the water stays in one place, Charitzin and Ne'itzim are ones that have a flow of water. Either they come from a spring, so there's always water, new water flowing into them, or even if not, they're like a canal or something, but they have a flow of water from one place to another. So, that's the question. If you're saying you have a klal and a pras, then you have bamayim would be a general thing, any body of water. Bayamim and acholim would mean only in yamim and acholim. So therefore, it would exclude kalim. And it would exclude, and it would exclude even charisim, it would exclude boros, and it would even exclude charisim and
etim. That's what I was asking.
The answer is bamayim chod of a kol. Yes, we have another bamayim in the pasuk over there. It says twice in the pasuk bamayim. You have a klal, another klal, and a prat. So therefore, that's it. And
one second.
Yeah, but the question is, how does that work? Then you have a klal or prat. You're asking for a klal or prat or klal. What are you? The answer is Amar Ravina Kida Amri B'mar Rava. It's like they say in Eretz Yisrael, Kol Mokem Shata Moitz Shnei Klalos Asmuchen Delazeh. Anywhere in the Torah where you find one klal adjacent to another klal, which you don't need, because once you have the first klal, it tells you everything you need. Hatam Prat Benehem. Take the nearby prat, take the nearby prat and stick it between them. The Dunim the klal of prat the klal. Treat it as if it was written in the order klal of prat the klal. Therefore. We'll,
for now,
it's not klal klal of prat. It's a klal of prat of klal, and therefore you have to don elokein of prat. So now
we
take the second bamayim.
Take it as klal of prat of klal.
Exactly. Therefore, so now we have a klal of prat of klal. Therefore, bamayim klal, bayamum anacholim prat, bamayim chaz of a kol, klal of prat of klal. You have to don elokein of prat. Ma prat nefurish mayim noivim. So what do we have in the prat? What is it about yamim and nacholim? They're both ones that have flowing water. Afko mayim noivim. Therefore, anything else that is flowing water, then the same rules apply. In order to eat a creature that lives there, yeah, it has to have fins and scales. And if not, then it's also my rabbi. So what are we including by that? What are we including that's similar to the prat? Charisim and itzim leitzura. We're adding charisim and itzim, which yes, even though they're man-made, but they have a flow. Right.
What is it exactly?
Charisim and itzim are like canals or whatever. But they have a flow. Charisim are long and skinny like a canal. Right. Well, my meat, Boris, Shichan, and Myris, Lahatera. What are we being reminded from that? We're saying that Boris, Shichan, and Myris, that there's a heter that you're allowed to eat the creatures in them, even if they don't have fins and scales. That's excluded on the basis of the prat. Because the prat is only things that have a flow, that have a current, that have a flow, like lakes and rivers.
But certainly not
Kalim, right. But the point is, even Boris, Shichan, and Myris, right. So the question is, maybe learn differently. Maybe the prat, the yamim and the cholim, are things where you have water somewhere on or in the ground. Then therefore, akol mayim gdelim agabe karka. Therefore, it would include any case where you have water in the surface
instead of flowing,
right? Umay rabi afula boris shichan and myris leisora. Then you would say that we're including that also boris shichan and myris are also to eat worms that are in them. Umay miet kalim, and then the only thing you're being mimayat is kalim, which are not in the ground at all. The answer is you can't say that because in kain tochlu maya honey. Ultimately, you have the extra word tochlu in the pasuk. Zet tochlu mikol hashem amayim. We said before, you have two ekerim that the pasuk is implying. One on the basis of bayamu v'anacholim, which we just said is a klal of prat v'klal, but you have another one from techelu. If you were going to say that the klal of prat v'klal is only leaving us with a heter for kalim, then you don't need the zet tochlu mikol hashem amayim. Therefore, it has to be that the klal of prat v'klal is excluding bodas shichan amayris, that you're allowed to eat the worms in them. And that tochlu is including, on top of that, also that you're allowed to eat the worms and kalim. So that's it. So that's where we are so far. So now we're going to continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and deal more with these dinim of when you're allowed to eat the worms and when you're not. In kalim and in bodas, shichan, and myris.
They have to grow there
and after not left there. It's the basic summary of it, but we'll deal with it tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Okay.